Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. You probably know my guest Adam Goldberg from his acting career. He's appeared in films and TV shows like Saving Private Ryan, Dazed and Confused, A Beautiful Mind, The Hebrew Hammer, Zodiac, Fargo, and many more. But he's also had a long career in music, recording albums, and scoring films. His latest is Home, A Nice Place to Visit, which is coming out May 4th, and Adam Goldberg joins us now. Welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you, Ian. Pleasure to be here.
Be
in L.A. talking to you.
Yeah, close enough. Modern technology.
Yeah. Be somewhere warmer than probably you are, I'm guessing.
It's pretty much true around the year, I think.
Yes, but if it's any consolation, I spent 6 months in Toronto and spent a good portion of the winter there, so I earned my wings.
What were you doing in Toronto, working on movies or music?
I was doing a TV show there called Taken, which is actually on now. Yeah, I've barely been home this last year, actually. We were in Albuquerque. I was doing another TV show there for a couple months and then went straight to Toronto for 6 months. Came home a couple of weeks, then just did a movie in Albuquerque again, another Albuquerque thing. And then just got back 2 nights ago, and we're moving the house that we've lived in for 12 years in 2 weeks. So, as I told you before we began, couldn't have picked a better time to release a record.
Is that why you named it Home, A Nice Place to Visit?
You know, it's not. It's yes and no. Yeah. The working title of the record had always been Mood Swing, but I've had a blog on Tumblr since its early days. Back in 2010, and it's called Home, A Nice Place to Visit, and, you know, it was meant to be a bit tongue-in-cheek, because I've always had a sort of a an uneasy relationship, I guess, with home, but that's just to say that I have an uneasy relationship with anything, and anything I think that feels like a commitment, and I find home both an incredibly sort of a source of incredible comfort, but also a place which I feel like can be, you know, prohibitive in some ways, and actually even terrifying in other ways. But having said that, the blog is a music and photography blog. So it really began as a sort of exercise to see if I could record a piece of music every other day and upload an analog photo. So I was shooting, and I still shoot, you know, analog photography, but I was working a lot with instant films, so I could really, you know, I could put them out in kind of more or less real time. But it was just, you know, sort of forcing me to do this kind of artistic exercise. Music stuff, though I always wanted to be musical, honestly came late and came through like a lot of osmosis. I was like a rudimentary drummer in high school, but I didn't drum with band. I probably jammed twice in my entire life. I played the David Bowie records mainly in my living room and my garage. And it wasn't really until my early 20s that I started just up and writing songs and recording them. And it was kind of part and parcel of the same process where I was writing as I was recording. They weren't kind of distinct things to me. And the recording process became, and by that, I mean, I was recording into four tracks at the time. So So, you know, it became as much, you know, as whatever, as instrumental to the process of writing a song as the instrument itself, whether it was a guitar. And then as time went on, I would start to sort of, you know, pour kind of autodidactically, manage to bluff my way through enough chord progressions on piano and stuff to put together songs. And, you know, and ultimately I now end up playing everything on the last two records, although in this case I have my wife and my engineer, who's a musician, Andrew Lynch, and another good friend of ours, Merritt, playing violins and trumpet on it, but I'm doing everything else.
Do you have plans to perform this material live? Because I noticed in the notes accompanying the album that it says you find rehearsal and performing very stressful.
Yeah, I've done it, and I've tried to do it, and I've not done it. And even though I'm an actor by trade, as years have gone on, I mean, just to be frank, I have anxiety issues that have gotten kind of exacerbated over the years and not better. So that really hasn't helped in terms of, I mean, like, for instance, I haven't done a play since I was 23 years old or something like that. You know, I'm not a fan of public speaking. You know, so I either have to put a band together, I have to, you know, this is one of the reasons I play all this stuff myself, is it's just more convenient for me to do it.
Are there things that you have to do in your acting or your music to combat the anxiety you feel?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I've been in therapy and stuff forever. I mean, there's techniques. I've been in CBT, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, actually for the last year, which was different from what I had been doing prior to that, meditation, hypnosis, you know, all kinds of things. You know, I think that at some point I realized that this instinct to perform, though I still have it, is really like kind of like rooted in the 6-year-old that went to go see like Rocky. I mean that's like kind of where it began. Like, mm-hmm. I saw Rocky and I left the theater like bobbing and weaving and shadow boxing and telling my dad I wanted to be a boxer, like, and an actor. You know what I mean? And so, like, I took boxing lessons and I started putting on, like, scenes, you know, at my house from my dad, to whom I would, you know, sell tickets when he'd come pick me up on the weekend from my mother's. And at some point, it's, you know, they call it a play for a reason, and they call it playing for a reason. And I'm not, like, that playful a person. So it's just a weird, it's like a problem that I have, because I also like to, like, I'm, you know, I'm very creative. I mean, you know, I just mean that in the sense that I feel that compelled to create lots of different things. And part of the problem is that I've been trying to make sense of it all. It doesn't make any sense, you know?
So I want to ask you about a couple of songs on the album, if you don't mind. And
sure.
The Kids Are All Wrong, which mm-hmm. is a pretty funny track. Where did that come from?
Well, it's just kind of bad timing, because it's like, you know, this shooting happened recently, and these kids are coming out, and I've like never been prouder of having once been a teenager in my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I first saw that Emma Gonzalez speech, the first time she spoke, I wrote, you know, The Kids Are All Right. And it was like right after I had put out the song, The Kids Are All Wrong. But a lot of my music from when I first began accruing songs, you know, were like a lot of Poison Pen Letters, and sort of in a weird way, it's a throwback to that. And so really it makes just a lot of musical references.
Well, I came from a house that went to Hebrew school twice a week, so the Hebrew Hammer was huge for us.
Yeah.
And I know that you were working on a fundraising campaign to make a sequel.
That's right.
Where does that mm-hmm. stand now?
Well, so we did this kind of unusual campaign through Indiegogo had a partnership with a place called Microventures, and it was an unusual kind of crowdsourcing in that it was equity crowdsourcing, which meant that, you know, you owned equity in the film. You weren't simply donating $50 and got a, you know, a hat or whatever. But it's the platform, to be honest, was just, I don't really think, conducive to what we needed to do in order to sort of raise awareness. Because really, John Kesselman, the filmmaker, and I had talked about, we've had the Hebrew Hammer versus Hitler in one version or another has existed since 2005.
Oh, wow.
So I decided that it suddenly became relevant again, or relevant really at all. I mean, at the time it sort of just seemed like a laugh, and then suddenly it felt imperative when a kind of cross between people reaching out to me saying, we need the Hebrew Hammer now more than ever, and people saying, you know, to the ovens with you, Gew, like, you know, which was I was getting in about equal measure during both the Trump campaign and his subsequent presidency, if you want to call it that. And I'm suddenly started to feel like a responsibility to really, and I always did. I mean, I always felt somewhat victimized by a kind of polite anti-Semitism and all of that. But then suddenly it would, you know, it just reared its head in this kind of awful, unabashed, old school, you know, Klansman kind of way. And I thought, hey, now's the time to resurrect this, the Hebrew Hammer. And we kind of reworked it a little bit to give it some context. So it's not directly related to Trump. There's political allusions to it or whatever. And so, you know, we made this kind of a mini Hebrew Hammer short about kind of why the Hebrew Hammer needs to come out of retirement.
I like this guy. He's from the Meatloaf Show.
What's he doing?
I mean, first of all, this guy's a choke artist, and this guy's a liar.
He would take his pants off and moon everybody. He referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee.
But is this what you're worried about? I mean, you don't think this guy stands a chance in the holy hell of becoming president, do you?
Yeah, I actually do.
Oh, honey, you're adorable. I mean, really, I mean, there's not a screenwriter in the world that can concoct something this ridiculous. I mean, it's just inanely stupid.
So help me God.
All of that aside, are you surprised at all at the afterlife that film has had for you?
Yes and no. I was reluctant to do it because I was afraid it would become a cult film, you know. But like I said, in the last 2 years, have made things very clear to me, which is that, there is a problem. and if I can help mollify that problem in any way or defend a culture or any culture, I feel obliged to do that.
Shabbat shalom, mama.
Adam Goldberg is the Hebrew Hammer.
You know, I felt like this is a kind of the thing with my career, such as it is over time, it seems like everything kind of ends up having a cult following just because you just are around long enough. And, you know, it used to be that, you know, Christ, I mean, you know, I grew up on the Z Channel, which was like this incredible cable station in Los Angeles, you know, which has really exposed me to some of the films that ended up changing my life as I was a kid growing up. I mean, you multiply that times whatever exponentially, right? And all of the ways in which people are exposed to media now. And yeah, there are all these like funny little resurgences of interest and things that you know, I did so long ago. I mean, nothing has really been that surprising to me, you know? Did I think Saving Private Ryan was an Oscar movie? Yes. You know, it's like, did I think it was going to change my life forever? Not really. I mean, yes and no. I mean, you know what I mean? Everything has just kind of gone the way that it should. And I've always kind of said I have about as much success as I could possibly handle, but just enough failure to really, like, frustrate the hell out of me and keep me completely motivated, if not enraged.
Well, I was going to ask, I mean, are you happy with the way things have gone? But it sounds like there's two answers to that.
Right, yeah.
Well, we've been speaking with Adam Goldberg about the new album, Home, A Nice Place to Visit, which is coming out May 4th. Adam, I've been following you for quite a while, and it was a real pleasure to have you on the show. So thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, Ian. It was so nice to have this conversation with you. And thank you for your great questions and genuine conversation. I appreciate it.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.